All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I am your host, Chris Lamberth. You can listen and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, the host site, and now on Spotify. Today, I have a super special return guest. You know him. You love him. Comedian, writer, podcaster, black dad, Randolph Terrence. Randolph, how the hell are you?
I am good, man, as always. Thank you for having me. As usual, I appreciate you.
Of course. You know, it's always, you're one of my true friends because I can easily give you an assignment and you'll do it. You're one of my, and it's not, it's an assignment for a podcast because most of the times we like to podcast the stuff that we intake, like the films and the media that we take in, and we like to discuss it. And we bring in and share it to everybody. But, you know, sometimes you tell friends just on principle, like, hey, this is a good movie. You should see it. And they're like, okay, man, okay. And then 2 years later, I saw that movie you told me about. It's pretty good. But you
well, I trust your judgment. That's what it really is.
I appreciate that, man. So we're gonna talk about the latest novel from Pulitzer Prize winner Colson Whitehead, The Nickel Boys. And we're going to talk about the new film, Loose. But before that, how are things with you, Randolph? How are things in your world so far?
Just trying to make that dollar out of that 15 cents.
I hear you.
You know.
A dime and a nickel.
Same superheated. Yeah. Same superheated. as Petey Steele loves to say.
Okay.
You've heard Petey say that before,
I
no?
don't. I don't know.
He loves that. That comes from American Pimp.
Okay. Doesn't he know that movie? He knows it back and forward, right?
He knows it back and forth. He knows it better than we do.
Yeah, I don't. I just know the stuff that you guys recite on the show. Yeah. So how's the writing gig treating you? How many months are you in now?
Oh, I don't even know. Maybe 3-4, I guess.
Okay, yeah, that's good.
I mean, it's still, you know, it's still imposter syndrome there, but
yeah.
You know. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Thought I got a text message from my wife, but no.
Okay.
Yeah, the imposter syndrome is still there, you know. I don't think it ever goes away.
Maybe it's something that keeps you on your toes. But at the same time, you still have to, I guess, find ways to enjoy it. The thing that made me think about that was like watching Jerry Rice's Hall of Fame speech a few years back, where it just seemed like his life, like he was such a fantastic player, arguably one of the best to ever play the game in any position. And it didn't seem like he had fun. Like, I'm sure he had fun when they won, but he said that he never really took it all in to a certain degree.
Did he say that? He never really enjoyed himself?
Basically, yeah. That's what most of his speech was about.
Just about driving himself.
Yeah, coming from an HBCU, Mississippi Valley State.
Yeah.
Dad, like, you know, his dad was a bricklayer, a brick mason, and that's how he got good hands because his dad used to throw bricks to him, you know, and stacking, you know, all that stuff.
Was he throwing them to him or was he throwing them at him?
No, they were working. They were working.
Okay.
And so he, you know.
Was that his silent plea?
I don't know. Maybe if you open.
Nobody ever helped me, you know.
Maybe if you peel the onion back layers back a little bit, you'd probably find some. I don't know. I don't know what you'd find, but.
Well, his training, Aussie's training regime was legendary.
Yeah.
That's got to come from somewhere.
Right. You
know, where did that come from?
It will get his
the
dad.
The drive to be the best? Is that what it is? I don't know.
Part of it was his dad. I don't remember it from verbatim, but it's on there. It's online.
Yeah.
That's the best.
30 for 30?
No. It's his. I don't know. Most guys do about a half hour. They do a half hour set, like, you know, Champ Bailey. The Hall of Fame inductions were
just a couple weeks ago.
A couple weeks ago, Champ Bailey, Ed Reed. I listened to I watched theirs. I watched and Tony Gonzalez's. Yeah, that's the best way for me to get at least one good cry in every year. Like a
you
man
you're
cry.
You're not doing Outside the Lines on Sunday anymore?
It's not the same anymore.
Oh, and they don't hit you anymore the way they used to?
They used to
look like they were coming to make people cry.
Oh, I turn away from it. Like every Sundays, like I used to, I don't think I ever did a bit about it, but I would always talk about it on the show, but right. I just turn away from it now. But I think when I was a little more engaged in the NFL, I would take it all in. I would, like, the whole Sunday, that was a thing, you know, right. watching all that. But now it's like, you know, I think with the Kaepernick stuff and with a lot of the other things going on in the league, it's just kind of like, I haven't boycotted, but I just lost interest. And that's been for... Yeah. It's been about.
It's hard to find joy in things.
Yeah.
As you start to become, as the children say, woke.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this hundreds of times. I think it's just like right. when you know the emperor has no clothes, it does become harder. But I found right. joy in, you know, talking to people on my podcast and going to see art and the art that this society. That's the art that's a reaction to what's going on in the world kind of makes me feel some kind of way. And I think that's where I find solace in.
Right.
I think I've always found it, like, you know, since being a kid, you know, from pretty much day one, you know.
Right, right.
Since I was conscious of it.
At least you had something, you know. You had a thing to go into.
Yeah, I think. I mean, what did you do when you were a kid? I'm sure you had comic books and.
I don't think I had. Well, yes. Yeah. I started to say no, but then as soon as you say that, yes, I had. I had books. I had science fiction.
Yeah.
And I had comic books. I got off of Stan Lee. I had mm-hmm. Stephen King. You know, I had autobiography of Richard Wright and. The Color Purple.
Yeah.
You know, I read that when I was like 13.
Right.
You know? I had books to go into.
Yeah.
So I had a place to go. Now that you say that, yeah. I started reading very early. It's, you know, reading has been a big help with this writing job.
Yeah.
That's the big thing, is that I read a lot. But I started reading very early. I've read my whole life. Mm-hmm. So writing... I think with Stephen King has a book called On Writing.
Okay.
Which I read. It's just about the writing process and stuff like that. And his big part of it was like, you want to be a writer, you need to be a reader. Because if you're not a reader, you're not a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, I can see it now when somebody's writing, I'm like, this person doesn't read.
Yeah.
The sentences don't go together. You know? And,
yeah.
Well, this person doesn't read. You're not even trying, bro.
It's true, and I need to do more of it. And I've
we talked about that before, and you did start.
Yeah, I was reading Coates, and then I read, you know, this Nickel right. Boys, and I read articles and stuff like that. But I need to be more voracious than I am.
For my sanity, I went back to reading fiction. I was going through a thing where I was reading a lot of nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
Killing me,
yeah,
spirit wise, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I get halfway into a book and I'm like, I can't finish this. Like,
yeah,
The Color of Law, you know, I'm like, oh, I can't finish this. It's just,
yeah,
you know, you get halfway in, it's just killing you. So, I made a point to start kind of reading fiction, but I would started seeking out black fiction,
mm-hmm.
You know, I started seeking that kind of stuff out.
Yeah. Now you spoke about, now we lost Toni Morrison, was it last week? And I haven't talked to anybody about it really, but I had a podcast that I recorded on Sunday, but I didn't release it because I know you and I were texting about it. And I was like, I don't know if I should. It was just a little anger was my thoughts weren't in order. And I was just kind of like, I was mad about some stuff, and I was just saying,
I think I called you an expletive.
You did call me an expletive. It's locker room talk, guys.
Locker room talk.
But I
called him an expletive for not letting you guys hear it.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'll do a. I almost feel like I'll be like a jazz musician and just release, maybe release it to Patreon and then do an alternate take. Where I'm like, hey guys, how about this? And
we've done that on our podcast. We'll excise huge chunks of things.
Yeah,
or we just won't release it. We've done that.
Yeah,
once.
There's been times when I've done them by myself and I've done an hour and I'm just like, I'm not releasing that. Yeah,
be angry.
It's angry, and it's just like I didn't like the flow.
Names and vendettas, and
I don't even go that far, but the names are in my head. It's like when you listen to a rapper that's mad on a song, and you're just like, who the fuck is he talking about? Jesus,
you describe the person very explicitly.
Yeah,
I never said his name. But you said this and this and this. I know what you're talking about.
One of my fondest memories of me hanging out with my dad was when Ether first came out, when Nas's Stillmatic came out. We were driving around Northern Virginia, and I think we were just trying to go. I think there was an Uno somewhere in Northern Virginia that we just drove out to, and I think I had bought. We went to stop at Best Buy, and I got that Stillmatic album with Ether on it. And I was playing it in the car, and my dad was like, "Oh my god!" You know, my dad was like, "Who is he talking about? He's really angry." Yeah. I was like, "Yeah, Dad, he is. Nas is really mad, Dad.
Nas is mad right now.
He is upset."
Another memory, Uno. I haven't had Uno. Last time I had an Uno was in Astoria, Queens.
Oh, so it was there,
right outside the movie theater.
It was there when you were up here.
Yup, that Uno's outside of Kaufman Astoria movie theater.
Yeah,
that's the last time I've eaten Uno's.
It's all right. Like they have them.
There.
Yeah, I don't think it's the best Chicago deep dish pizza, but it's tasty. It's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. They had a single serving one, a little round single serving one.
Yeah, yeah. They have one in. They have quite a few. Like upstate, they have more of them, but it's not bad.
I remember the movie. It was what's the movie with Eddie Murphy when he played Thunder early?
Dreamgirls.
Yeah, we saw Dreamgirls.
Yeah,
it was a date night. We saw Dreamgirls and we ate it. Who knows?
I too took a white woman to see that movie. I think I took a white woman to see that movie.
There you go.
And I got pulled over.
Oh God! You're lucky you didn't die.
Yeah, I know. I know. I was like, God damn it.
Lucky you didn't die.
Yep. Yep. What else do I want to talk to you about while I'm before we get into this stuff? How do you feel about Hove partnering with the NFL?
I was just reading about it a little while ago. His record on civil rights is pretty strong.
Yeah.
It's really strong, you know, the work he's done as far as civil rights and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But this move just really, it really baffles me because there's not really any way you can go around the fact that the NFL, while claiming to care about civil rights, pretty much every owner in the NFL supports a man who wants to take away civil rights.
Right.
Not just support him, they actively give money to a man who wants to take away civil rights.
Yeah.
But you want to push civil rights. You can't. I don't know how you reconcile those two. I couldn't. I don't.
I think he's saying like you can do it within and try to spark change in there and opportunities.
But okay, so you show me the time in history that someone has worked from within and changed an organization. Just point that out to me.
Oh, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, you hear it all the time. People say it. Point it out to me. I'd like to know when that time was.
I think it's an opportunity. Colin got paid, and it's like, okay, well, let's make these corporate events like the Super Bowl and all these other things have more hip hop.
Right, and then you're making money for people who are going to turn around and give that money to a man who's trying to take civil rights away from your community.
Yeah,
as well as other imperiled communities, you know.
Yeah, you know,
that's what it comes down. That's the truth of it. There's not really any way you can separate those two things away from each other.
Yeah, I don't really. It doesn't really. I'm not mad at it. I just think that I will stay to this till the day that I die. That I'm black quarterbacks all the way. I like the fact that there's more in the league. I like the fact that Kyler Murray is probably going to be a first year starter. What pissed me off was I just saw Stephen A. and what's the white guy Max Kellerman said that Jameis Winston was the most overrated quarterback in the NFL.
There's a lot of overrated quarterbacks.
Yeah, nobody wants to call Andrew Luck a bust. He came in the same as RG3. I saw somebody, a guy that I did theater with in Chicago who's a Colts fan, retweeted something like, "You can't blame anything on Andrew Luck
because of his injury." The NFL is a results-oriented league, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, what are the results?
He's not winning.
That's all it really comes down to. It's a results-oriented league, and what are the results? I'm not even watching football, and I know Cam Newton played his whole season last year with a hurt and injured.
Fucked up shoulder.
And people were talking shit about him constantly.
I rented the video game last week, and I was playing, and I was playing as the Panthers. I'm like, he doesn't have shit.
Yeah,
it just sucks. But I mean, that's who I am. That's how I like get joy out of it. But back to your point of last year, like just the owners supporting Trump. I mean, the only reason. So once the owners knelt, it was a moot point. Like it was over. They got mad because Trump talked shit about them, and then now they're like, "Oh, well, we gave you money, dog, and now you gonna." You gonna shit on us like this? Oh, we're kneeling now. After that point, it didn't mean shit.
Yeah, kneeling jumped the shark at that point.
It jumped the shark. There was no need for it anymore.
Right. You couldn't do it.
Right.
It's out. You know.
Right. So that's when I was like, okay, this shit is over. I don't know what week that was, but I was just basically like, I was talking to my parents about it. I was like, "Yes, yeah, it should have been over there." And now, like, what kind of fucks me up a little bit is, and I think you'll find something interesting in this. Like Kenny Stills, player for I think he's a wideout for the Dolphins.
Right.
He's
right.
Like still doing a protest, and they got a black coach, and the black coach is like, like he doesn't know.
Yeah, I'm up here talking to Lambert on his podcast. He's hiding from you, I guess.
Who? Tell Amy I said hello and happy belated birthday.
Oh, wife just came home.
You gonna get in trouble?
No. Oh. Yeah, I'm gonna get in trouble.
Okay. Are we good?
Hold on.
Okay.
She's playing. She likes to play this game now where she hides from us.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't want to answer. And then my wife's getting all antsy.
Oh.
That's cool. Go to bed, bro.
How much does...
So Kenny wants to try to... I don't know what he's doing. Is he playing both sides?
I don't know, man. It's just weird because it's a black coach and, like, he just got that job and he barely got it. And, like, they're just making him, you know... Putting him through the fire.
What is Kenny Stills' responsibility? Is his responsibility to this black coach?
No, it's not. It's not. No, I just find it interesting. That's all. It's a. Yeah. It's the coach is in a quagmire. That's all.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Because what is he supposed to say to that?
Well, he's not going to say damn thing.
Because he's got a responsibility. Kenny Stills doesn't, but now. Kenny's the coach. What is his name? Shit, Miami. It'd be nice if I knew his name. I didn't know.
He's I think he's black Latino, Afro Latino. Excuse me.
Something like that. Coach.
However we're saying it.
Brian Flores.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's just like, ugh. And I feel for him, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. he's in a position, but so is everybody else black on that team.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, it should be, but, I mean, we know what they're going to do and say. We know how they're going to respond, so.
Yeah.
You know, Kenny's outspoken, but he was part of, I'm calling him Kenny like I know him.
Yeah.
K-Dog, he was part of it from the, he was part of it from the beginning, though.
Right.
So, I mean, he may have just now found out about Ross.
Mm-hmm.
I said on our podcast, you know, people talk about boycotting Equinox and SoulCycle. I'm like, y'all couldn't even keep a Chick-fil-A protest going.
Yeah.
So you're not going to protest.
We're not. So it's hard.
Stop saying you're going to.
That's why, you know? That's why we really have to protect Popeyes at all costs.
I know. Like, that's going to be, man, it'll be a horrible thing for me if Popeyes, oh, that would hurt my soul.
That would hurt my soul. Dude, that chicken sandwich tasted so good. I was like, I hope.
It's fucking good, man. I've had two.
Yeah, me too.
It's going to be a go-to now for me.
Because I tried to.
We have a listener, the guy who did the, on
Keith
Twitter.
Blair, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so he did the Andy's chicken,
yes.
Andy's thigh biscuits.
Right.
Today he did a challenge between Popeyes and chicken sandwich and Wendy's chicken sandwich.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, he's doing the work.
He did a video of that.
Yeah,
I got to look for
Keith Blair.
Yeah, he's a good dude. I think he came to our universe through JL.
Yeah.
And then
good
he could
dude, man.
Yeah, because
he's doing the work.
Yeah. It's really impressive. I tried the chicken tenders. I didn't care for those.
I mean, they're okay. I think they do a strip too that I've tried. But this chicken sandwich, oh my God.
Yeah, people are already gearing up for the naysayers on Black Twitter to say like why it's not that good and all this shit.
What?
They're just waiting for them to be like contrarian and all this shit, you know.
Get the
fuck out of here.
Get the fuck out of here.
It's so
first
good.
First of all, it's fucking big.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the first one I had, when I took it out of the package, I was like, what is it? I had to cut it. I just cut it in half and I saved it.
Yeah.
I ate like half of it and then I saved the other half and I ate that.
Oh, okay.
I was like, why is this thing so big? You know?
Yeah, that shit is,
real chicken too.
It is
like,
real, yeah.
It's not processed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can tell it's like all uneven, like what's cut and just thrown in like a deep fryer. And
yeah, it's pretty. It's a remarkable sandwich. I just hope nobody. I hope they like gay people and black people and.
I know. I don't need that in my life. I really don't.
And if they did, like, would you even tell anybody that you ate there? You know, would you even say, like, would you say?
I have put down a lot of things just because it starts to bother me in my spirit.
Yeah.
It would be tough.
Because I've been the last couple of weeks, like, I didn't know that sandwich was out. Everybody was talking about it. When it gets to my parents, when they tell me I should try it, I'm like, oh, my God.
I just saw it on the menu one day. I was like, they got a chicken sandwich now? Let me try this.
Shit.
I got it home. I was like, what the fuck
yeah.
is this?
That's universal. That's all damn near universal acclaim. Like, as close as you could get on Black Twitter, like, you can't say shit about Beyonce, and you can't say anything about Popeyes.
No, I'm scared to put chicken on it. I'm scared to put cheese on it.
Oh, why would you do that?
If I told them to put cheese on that sandwich, and it turns into what I think it's going to be, I might eat one every day. I don't need that.
I doubt that you would do that. What, I mean, it's almost like you don't even have to put anything. You don't have to put anything
really
on it.
You really don't. I try to limit myself to Popeyes once every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's my deal with myself.
Yeah.
Because I'll go bananas. So
yeah, I try not to do. Once. I like Friday. Is kind of like, Friday's like the day for me. Like you get off work. It's the weekends here and stuff like that, but that sandwich is great.
But like when my parents come into town, dog, we'll eat Popeyes every night while they're here.
Do they not have it They gotta
they
have
got it.
They just
there's
don't.
One right up the street from me.
I know. I've been there with you. Yeah.
Right up the street.
Do your parents have one near them in Texas, or do they just?
Yes, but in Texas you do churches.
Okay.
That's the guilty chicken in Texas. It ain't got shit on Popeyes, but
yeah.
What churches has going for is that it's really greasy.
It's been so long since I've had churches,
and that grease makes it go.
That's the first place that had they sold okra. They had okra
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that grease really makes it go.
Damn.
Hang on a second.
Okay.
I'm on a podcast, babe. I'm on this boy's podcast. This is pretty.
Angel picked it out for me.
That's Angel nice. Very nice.
My mom took it.
It's good. It's nice. Daughter loves you. Right now, she's not a teenager yet. Yeah, man.
Yeah, we're back.
There's a Papa there. When did the... I heard that the churches in D.C. burned down.
Oh, really?
Somebody told me that.
I didn't even know there was one in D.C.
There used to be a church in D.C. and it burned down. It was so greasy. She just went up like a tinder box.
Oh, my God. What about that KFC?
There's a Popeyes on U Street that I've eaten at, and there's a KFC, I think, on U Street. But I don't... Once you really start getting down with Popeyes, you won't eat KFC no more.
Chicken was like... Now, KFC, there was a KFC in Eden, North Carolina that blew up. I think you... Maybe you guys talked about it on the show.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's near my grandmother's, my mom's
it's
parents'
that grease,
place.
Man.
Yeah.
It's that grease. Once that grease catches, that's it.
I know that area because we used to go to the flea market over there. But... Yeah. Yeah, I don't like chicken is one of those things like you have to be sitting down. I like to be at home or sitting down.
So
I don't. It's not like McDonald's or Wendy's or something like most of those people because he's like Bill Burr had that joke where he was talking about like, oh, and the new McRib came out. Oh,
yeah.
Fuck my dreams.
We'll get some chicken.
Yeah. Yeah. I gotta get some. Fuck my dreams.
Chicken. You know, the thing about chicken is that. I'm not going to be dainty with it.
Yes, exactly.
So I don't like being out eating it. That's why. I don't like being out when I'm eating chicken. I'm just not going to be dainty. That's a 50-year-old black man talking.
I get it, man.
I kind of look like a stereotype just in my head.
We did that at, you know, I have a bit about that, but we did that at work one time where we went to Popeyes for Black History Month.
Yeah,
it's really politically incorrect. But we went to Popeyes and like some of the team went and it was just like, this is cool. But like, I just had chicken tenders, I think, because I didn't want to like be eating like
you're eating off the thigh bone.
Yeah.
Just,
nobody
like if I go to a restaurant and if they got fried chicken here, I'm like, I ain't fried chicken in a restaurant.
Yeah, it's not the same.
I can't eat with a knife and fork. I can't eat fried chicken with a knife and fork. I'm not doing that.
When I go to Hooters and I eat inside, like it's different because it's wings. But yeah, I don't.
Well, I was about to say you can get away with wings.
Yeah,
you can hold a wing in your hand and wave it around. It's just something about holding a chicken breast in your hand, an on the bone chicken breast.
Right, it's not the same.
You're peeling it off with your fingers, and you're dipping the fingers, and you're dipping the chicken in the sauce.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I can't do that shit on public.
It's not the best of looks. it's not.
I just can't. And then at some point, I'll pick it up and start gnawing off the bone. I can't do that shit on public.
Have you... So you asked me earlier what I was going to drink.
Here comes my white wife. We don't have to gnaw at the bone. Yes, I do, woman.
You don't have... Honey, come on. But she's from the South, so she knows.
Well, she's from the South, too. So
yeah.
She's like, manners. Like, fuck them manners.
Yeah.
That's why I'm home.
Right.
That's why I'm home. I gotta gnaw on that bone. My mom would split the bone and suck the marrow.
Yeah, my mom. Yeah, she would do that too. Yep. Yeah.
Bite that bone and crack it, and then suck the marrow out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't go that far.
Who? What's the guy? Tom Rhodes was on Bobby Lee's podcast.
Who's y'all? Who's y'all? y'all are crazy.
There's an episode. There's an episode of Bobby Lee's podcast, Tiger Belly, and Tom Rhodes.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Rhodes was like, he's a world traveler and all that. And they were talking about like Filipinos, the way they eat chicken. I guess it's like a similar way that we do too. Like they eat the bones and all that. And Bobby Lee's girlfriend Kalila is a Filipino, and they were talking about that. Like that made me think about that, the bones and stuff.
She won't eat in public either.
I don't know if she does, if she's afraid of it, but I don't think she would be. But I mean, I think they kind of get down. They get down.
I like Tom Rhodes.
I do too. Yeah,
I've had the pleasure of talking to him more than once over the years, and he's a really good dude.
He seems like it. He seems cool as shit.
Yeah, he ejected a kid from the green room at the Improv one time.
What happened?
Oh, the kid called Middle Eastern people sand niggers.
Oh, well, that'll be a good reason.
Tom immediately said, get the fuck out of here.
Jesus.
Get the fuck out of here.
It's weird when you're a comic. Well, I guess it's not that weird, but it's kind of like, I don't know, for us to be like, we're supposed to be not like we're philosophers and shit, but we're supposed to be like thinkers. And like, you can't, it's weird to just be against a group of people.
Yeah, when you hear ignorance, especially ignorance, you're like, this doesn't even begin to make sense. And you call yourself a comic and you're talking like that, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
You don't want to be bothered.
Yeah, it's just like, ew. What's going on?
Another just random fact about Tom. You ever seen his wife?
Well, I think didn't he get divorced? I think he got divorced.
Tom Rose got divorced? No, he didn't.
Yes, he did, man. The last time
he divorced her?
Yeah.
Oh, that is unfortunate. I didn't know that.
This is Tom Rose talk. The last time I saw, I mean, when was he on Tiger Belly? Because he was talking.
They were traveling the world together.
Yeah, I know.
Did he give a reason why?
It's been a while since I listened to that episode, but he
on his podcast.
It was on Bobby Lee's podcast.
Okay.
Let me see if I spelled his name right. Tom Rhodes. Wait a minute. It still says he's married. Now,
a beautiful, beautiful black girl.
Ansha wrote. I'm married in 2000. Oh, yeah, she's hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they might have gotten divorced. You know? I don't think he talked about it on Tiger Belly.
Yeah.
Dude.
That's unfortunate.
I don't want to put the wrong. Let's see. I just don't want to put the wrong.
She's a black girl from Holland. She's from Suriname.
Our last day together, my amazing wife is divorcing me, and I'm at a low point in my life. Yeah, so.
Oh, she said she's divorcing him.
Yeah. Probably all that traveling. I don't know. I don't know. I didn't even know that.
That is unfortunate.
7 months ago. It's all over, but yeah. She moved out January 31st.
Oh.
Yeah.
Beginning of the new year.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to work with him when he was at Levity, but I think...
really good comics.
Yeah.
Really smooth, really quick.
He had a good, really good interview where he interviewed Bill Burr on his podcast about, like, and they were talking about, like, kind of keep doing what you're doing.
Speaking of beautiful black wives.
Who are we talking about? His wife. Oh, yeah, Burr's wife.
Burr's wife.
Yeah, I met, she's really nice. Yeah. He's really nice.
Tom and I kind of bonded over clothes and shoes one time. Awesome.
Okay.
Yeah,
how is comedy going in DC?
Oh, it's going, man.
I know you got a couple good gigs coming up.
I got two gigs coming, but you know I pulled back.
Yeah, because of the show,
the job, because I was really trying to buckle down to the job and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but it seems like I have a little bit more security now with it.
Yeah,
so I can do things with my other gigs.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
back and I start doing stand up more.
I'm starting to get back into the bar shows now, because I need to. I think I told you last week I did a show and I was like, oh, I had a good set, but it's kind of like, ugh, it was kind of rusty in a way that it. I hadn't done this the bit in a long time too, and it was still, I was just kind of like, oh, I need to keep getting up more, you know. But I had one of those sets where it's like, oh, I need to, can't just rely off talent.
Yeah, I had that same thing, knocking rust off.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still there, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Help is podcasting.
What's that?
And podcasting and writing.
Oh yeah, yeah. That definitely helps. Well, look, man, I want to get into this. I don't want to hold you because you gotta.
No, it's fine. Let's get through it.
Let's.
Yeah, it's good, man. Don't worry about me. Let's go.
I wanted to. My first assignment to you was Colson Whitehead's latest novel, The Nickel.
Yeah, you know, it was funny because I think the day you contacted me about it,
mm-hmm.
I had already listened to him on two podcasts.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, I don't know, I've heard of this guy. You know, I always feel when there's a writer I haven't heard of, mm-hmm. as a reader, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Why don't I know about this guy?
Yeah.
You know, what circles am I not moving in? Like Kaisi Lemon, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, why don't I know these people? So then I'll go find one of the books. So I heard him talking about the book, The Nickel Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a little research on the actual home that he based the book on. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So we'll just start
and then
with...
when you texted me, I was like, okay, I'm in. By the way, we're going to spoil the shit out of this, people.
Oh, so you want to spoil it? Okay.
I mean, I don't like... when we do stuff like this, I don't like dancing.
Yeah.
Trying to dance around what we're talking about.
Right.
It's the way the book is, there's no way we can...
Yeah.
Dance around the subject matter and stuff.
I looked at a couple on YouTube and they were like, it was a good book. Buy it.
Yeah. That's I'm like, really? That tells you nothing about the depth of this book just to say, yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like saying, oh, that Ferrari over there. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, it's we can do that, and we'll just say you got 36 minutes of us shooting the shit,
yeah,
talking.
Yeah, shooting the shit. Now, if you want to get out.
Yeah, so we're going to spoil Loose, and we're going to spoil The Nickel Boys.
Yeah, because both of them, you can't dance around the material.
Yeah.
I was trying to describe Loose to somebody today, and I was like, I can't even begin to tell you.
Right.
You got to go see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just trust me when I tell you it's good.
I'm trying to get a good synopsis. NPR summary says, a follow-up to the Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award winning The Underground Railroad, Colson Whitehead's new novel follows the harrowing experiences of two African-American teens at an abusive reform school in Jim Crow-era Florida. And it's based on the Dozier School in Florida,
yeah.
which opened in 1901 and just closed 7 years ago, like 2011.
Yeah.
And
so then you figure they did, let's see, 1901, yeah, over 110 years of abuse.
Yeah, beating kids' asses.
Oh, horrific abuse.
I would call this. I mean, it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
Like he gives you before we're not gonna spoil it right away, but I think even with the ending that we have, it's a tragedy. It's still.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's definitely a tragedy.
And then, like, the last stanza, the last paragraph, the last, I guess, scene of the book just kind of makes you say, fuck. There were several times. I read this.
It doesn't take away the tragedy of the whole story.
Yeah. And I would say when I first heard about Colson Whitehead, I want to say 2002, whenever, like, maybe 01 or 02. So John Henry Days came out. I want to say it came out in 2000. It came out in 2001. And I had I was just about to graduate from college and I found it at a bookstore in like the bargain bin. And I had mm-hmm. read something about him and I read the book. I was like, oh, I like this guy. He's a black dude. I'm like, all right. And then I went back and read The Intuitionist, which came out in 1999. And I was like, okay, I fuck with this guy. So I think I've read about five of his books. And the only other person that I really talked to about Colson Whitehead is was Damian Lemon. I think
has he read them too?
Yeah, he's read a couple, and I think his lady has read most of his stuff, and he was one of those dudes, because before, like, as far as like contemporary American authors, he's one of the few that I really kept up with. Like, and I would say Rick Moody. He's white, but Rick Moody wrote this book called The Ice Storm, which was made into a movie in 97 with
I remember that. Yeah.
And the only reason I got into him was really because that was Katie Holmes' first movie.
White Starlet.
Yeah, the first White Starlet.
Brothers, apparently.
Yeah. Fucking Jamie Foxx. Fucking
at least
asshole.
One.
So you have to have everything? Fucking asshole.
I mean,
No. He's
Jamie Foxx.
He's one of the most talented artists ever. Anyway, so like I started liking him, and I just, like, for superficial reasons, I went in and read that book, The Ice Storm, and was fucking blown away. Then I read his other stuff, and just like throughout the years, like, okay, this guy, and then maybe like Tom Parada, who did The Leftovers, he wrote Election, which was turned into a film with Reese Witherspoon and Matthew Broderick. So those were like white men that I liked in my late teens that I was into, and then Colson Whitehead comes along, and I'm like, okay, this is a black dude. This is like around the time where, you know, I knew I was black and everything, but this is around the time of my life where I started like gravitating towards black artists, like black writers.
Started wearing medallions.
No, it wasn't that. You know, it wasn't. You know what it was? It was like, I think I'm sure we've talked about this before, but just like really finding myself in college.
Yeah, it was Chicago that did that for you.
It was August Wilson. It was August Wilson in undergrad. So I went to a PWI, a private white institution. Like, it wasn't a Dear White People school, because Dear White People, those are like upper echelon. That's supposed to be like a Yale or Harvard.
Right.
This one was just like a Northeastern liberal arts school that it costs a lot of money. I'm in a lot of debt. But it wasn't to that level. You know what I mean?
Right.
And August Wilson, I've started like finding out like who I was as a person through these writers and figuring shit out.
Well, it's weird because you grew up in black-ass PG County.
Yeah.
And then you lived in black-ass Chicago.
Well, my black-ass Chicago wasn't really until I started doing... It's interesting, though, man.
You were able to be immersed in that world because of theater.
Yeah, I think...
I grew up in Whitey White, Texas.
Yeah.
You know, although in a heavily black and Latino part of it, just because of my family and all of our connections.
But you mentioned...
But for me,
You mentioned Alice Walker. You mentioned Richard Wright, when you were coming up.
House.
Yeah.
My parents.
Right.
And my father was going to school the whole time I was going to school.
Right.
And my father has two master's degrees. So he was going to school the whole time I was going to school. So these books were just around the house.
Yeah.
And I like to read.
Yeah.
So I would just pick up, like, I read House Till I Got a Groove Back.
Mm-hmm.
About 16, for no reason at all, other than the book was around. I like the cover.
Yeah, I think when Toni Morrison died, everybody said all this eloquent shit, and they brought up, for some fucking reason, we're going off in a fucking tangent. This is what we do, but they brought up the Bill Clinton was the first white first black president, and all that shit.
Yeah, they never understood what she was trying to say.
Yeah, and
they never understood it.
And for me, like, when you think of what young people are being fed with, like, I'm not going to shit. You think about what the books that young adults are, like, reading and what they're making movies out of, like Harry Potter, Hunger Games, the fucking Insurgent series or whatever, that the Divergent and all that.
Yeah,
the first book that I really gave a shit about was Song of Solomon. And that was like because of Oprah's book club, and Oprah was talking about it. So I was like, okay, Oprah likes it. Let me read it. And that, to me, like, that brought Toni Morrison out for me as like a 16, 17-year-old kid, black kid, you know, and that was the first book that I really gave a shit about, because we got to pick our own book to do a report on or whatever. And right. and that was, you know, it was that we were reading Their Eyes Were Watching God, all this shit. So I think, right. like...
Interestingly, I've never written Toni Morrison.
You should.
Yeah, no, I don't know why I haven't. What I have done, I've listened to her, a lot of her speaking, a lot of her talking and lecturing.
Yeah.
And she's, man, she is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really read any of her writing. I recognize the fact that, you know, they don't just hand out those Pulitzers, kids.
You know, yeah.
They don't just hand those out.
Right, you right.
know, you've got to do something to get one. You know.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people in my life love her, particularly women, but
right.
her being a woman writer has never warned me. Like I said, I've read How Stella Got a Groove Back,
mm-hmm.
The Color Purple, so that's not a problem for me. It's just what I think it was is that there was no Toni Morrison around the house.
Okay.
That can be the only thing I can think of. If there had been one, I probably would have read it.
What were they giving you in school? Like, what was the, do you remember some?
Oh, my God. Man, I went to we had a San Antonio, Texas curriculum. You didn't get no shit like that. You got to go find it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You didn't get shit like that in Texas in schools. You did not. You had to go find it. At least at the school system I was in, you had to go find it. It was in the library.
Yeah.
And maybe you had a black teacher that would turn you on to it. Or maybe you had a woke white woman teacher.
See, that's what I had. Miss.
If you were lucky.
Victoria Haviland, probably the best.
Right.
I think she's from Mississippi, but like she was like a young white woman. And she made us read Their Eyes Were Watching God. And she's like, what do you think about tea cake? She was fucking great. Like she was like, I remember her telling my dad, she's like, yeah, I gave Chris an A, but he could have worked harder. I was like, fuck. I was like, Jesus.
Now we did all the classics.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
do you read Gatsby?
You have acted in all the classics. We read all them shits. And then I ran up on a teacher who loved Stephen King the way I love Stephen King. So we would trade books and talk about books. White woman.
Yeah.
But as far as black authors, no.
Yeah, no. It's weird because I'm trying to think like most of, man. I don't know how many we really got into. It was
right.
Hurston.
Like I'd never read any Walter Mosley. Just popped into my head one day that I was listening to Walter Mosley on Jamil Hill's podcast. I was like, you know, I've never read a, he's got 60 some odd books. I've never read one. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So let me start with Devil in a Blue Dress.
Right.
It's a great book.
And I worked with the guy that directed the film, Carl Franklin in Mindhunter. That's coming
great
out.
Great book.
Coming out this
Blue
week.
Dress.
Yeah.
Great book. And I was like, well, I'm going to go through the
Easy Rollins
series.
Yeah.
I'm going to go through the series now.
I don't know why they didn't make a fucking series out of that, man.
Make a series of movies,
though? Like a movie or a TV show about, it's ripe with a lot of cool stories. I guess that
would. Easy?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just black masculinity. Hard to sell. We've talked about that before.
Yeah, I know.
Hey,
still...
let's do the book, man.
Yeah, let's do the book. Shit, sorry. All right.
We can go everywhere.
Yeah, I know. All right.
We can go everywhere.
So the book follows this kid.
We are talking about books.
We are talking about it. We're talking about, that's how we do, man. We meander. But
and I'm reading Octavia Butler. I started reading her, too.
Okay. Yeah. Sci-fi lady, right?
Yeah.
That the one of fucking only Wachowski.
One of only four black sci-fi authors.
Yeah. Didn't the Wachowskis take her Matrix story?
Huh?
Did the Wachowskis take her Matrix story? Was
that's
that hers?
Not been proven.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No, it's not her. That's another one. But it hasn't really been proven.
I'm being a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I don't like to. Stuff like that is really easy to prove.
Yeah. So what'd you think about the Nickel Boys? About Elwood and Turner?
Well, just starting from the beginning of Elwood.
Mm-hmm. young black kid growing up in Florida.
Elwood was to me a warning about respectability politics.
Mm.
He was a warning that of what respectability politics could do to you, that it can close your eyes.
Yeah.
And not have your eyes open to reality if you live inside of respectability politics.
And his grandmother gave
because
him.
He had people telling him along the way.
Yeah.
That how things were. And he would live with him. No, it can't be like it. It'll be like this because we just have to be. You know, he was so devoted to Martin Luther King where his grandmother gave him the albums. Think about that.
The Martin Luther King album. And it was just one album, right?
Of speeches, yeah. And he just listened to it over and over and over and over and over. And then he started following all these civil rights. The book is set in before Martin Luther King's death.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying that for the listeners.
Right, right.
So he begins to follow all these civil rights icons, and he likes how they carry themselves, he likes their dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants a piece of that, you know, and he feels like it's through these dignified responses that black people will get ahead.
Yeah.
It's all about the dignity of black people. Through the dignity, you show your humanity, and if you just act right, if you just move right and talk right and say everything right, then everything will work out for you. And his life was a testament to that. That's not the truth.
Yeah.
His whole life was a testament to that. Everywhere along the way, things were happening to him to tell him that that's not true.
And you think he just didn't pick up on it?
I wonder. I don't know. Did he not? Is it because he didn't have anybody to tell him? Like a father, like his father and his mother both left.
Just left him,
raised
yeah.
by his grandmother. So did he not have anybody to tell him? He had male figures, but I don't recall an older man telling him that.
No older black man. It was just like younger kids. Like,
right.
It always, it with him, in order for him to learn, he had to get beaten.
Yeah. And, it was like, and even through the beatings, it still wasn't leaving him.
No.
You know, there was an older black man saying, you know, this is how it is. Let me dispel some of these illusions.
Yeah. But you'd think that he was getting to the point where even when he was marching with his, you know, classmates and stuff, and you would think he was getting to coming to a realization, but it just didn't take. So this kid, Elwood,
and people took advantage of his
naivety,
forthrightness,
yeah,
and used it against him.
Mm-hmm.
At almost every turn, it was used against him. You know, he's working in the kitchen, but he's not working in that kitchen. He's just there.
Right.
But they put him to work, and they basically trick him into working hard. Because they use his strong work ethic against him.
Right.
And it's funny to them. The other employees, the other black people.
Mm-hmm.
There also was a sense of people trying to bring him down to their level. There was a sense of that to me.
Yeah.
Like people trying to bring him down to their level. Not just black people, white people too.
Did you ever see yourself in him at all throughout this book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that about you. I bet you you saw yourself
mm-hmm.
in him, studious and
yeah,
you know, and quite he's a very good student, very very smart, very unjaded.
Yeah. Do you think I'm not jaded yet?
No, I don't. I think it's a good thing too, but I think that. But you're not naive.
Yeah.
As you grow up in D.C., man. You can't grow up in D.C. and be naive. That don't go.
Yeah.
don't go.
I always say, you know, I try to keep it so hard, as hard as it is. Just, I think, like being abused by time, just being somebody that's been on the earth for almost 40 years. regardless of my skin color, but you just don't get through this life without being like abused by time. And those effects. But there's part of me that still, like, I talked last week to this toy designer, David Vonner, who was, we were talking about, like, how do you, you're making kids toys. You're making toys for kids. How do you still keep, with the way the world is, how do you still keep your imagination and creativity? You know, we're kind of talking about that. And it's sort of like, I don't want to lose that. I don't want to lose the joy and wonderment that allows me to try to make that attempt at transcending what's going on around me and still trying to create.
It starts to go.
Yeah. You know? So I'm trying to.
I watched that video you sent me, that Roxanne Gay.
Yeah.
I watched it.
Well, let's talk about that later. So Elwood is a studious kid growing up in Jim Crow era South Florida. He's a well-respected kid. His grandmother's raising him. Parents left him. And he gets an opportunity to go to school early and take college, to go to college and take college classes. On his way down there, he hitchhikes. And he gets a ride with this guy. Come to find out the guy that giving him the ride stole the car. And he gets sent to this place called the Nickel Academy, which is a reform school. And then that's
But the reason why he gets sent there is because, well, a couple of reasons.
Yeah.
One is they need workers to make money off of.
Yes.
Because that school is a revenue source. And they need people. So here you have, on the low end, we'll call it indentured servitude.
Oh, that's that's pretty explicit in the novel too, right?
But no one beats indentured servants, you know what I mean?
No, right.
So the only thing is it's slavery by another name.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know. And the other thing is that he's a black person, and you can do whatever you want to a black person.
Yeah.
And that is apparent by the fact that that school stayed open for over 110 years.
Yeah.
The actual school, the Dozier Academy, stayed open for over 110 years. And it wasn't until later that they went and found all these bodies buried there.
Yeah.
So, well, how did no one notice that all these people were disappearing?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Up to 2011, you didn't, up to 2001, you didn't know that bodies were disappearing? How is that possible? Well, it's actually, 2011. Well, it's possible because black bodies are expendable.
Yeah. People were paid off.
That's how you can do it. They're just expendable.
And they were a part of that economy. And it was just...
Right.
Yeah. It was just like, God, like, we're letting this shit happen. Like, people are still... Yeah. Like, and that's why people always joke, like, Florida is like another... is a whole nother world, man. It's just like the way it's been way we've seen it on the news with Parkland, with like, what was it a few years ago with the acid, like the whatever the drugs people were, like they were like zombie people and shit.
Oh yeah, yeah, the ones that eat people's face off.
Yeah, Trayvon.
That drug, yeah. It's crazy down there.
All that shit, man.
It's crazy down there. It's its own world, and we act like we laugh about it, but we don't act like it's insane.
Yeah.
That we allow people to live like that, and we allow them to get away with just doing this kind of crazy shit.
And it's just like this place is like filled with abuse. What are the story that one of the stories that while he was in there stood out for me was they talked about folks escaping, and the one story about the kid that gets away only to be fucking returned.
Yeah.
Was just like
up, brought back and killed.
I had to reread that part. Like, I was just like, did this, are you sure? Like,
you thought he made it, right?
Yeah.
I thought so too. I said, somebody escaped.
Yeah.
Nope.
And it was just like, I read this book in a day. Now, it's that good. I don't know. How do we? Do you want to highlight any other stories? Like the boxing story was.
Well, there's there's stories all the way through.
Yeah.
When he first gets there, his first beating, and
breaking up a fight.
You know, he gets the beating for breaking up a fight.
Right.
That's twice he gets beat for breaking up a fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the first time on the outside in the world, second time in there.
Yeah.
He can't bring himself to not, because it offends him that injustice is happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it hurts his dignity, and I think he feels like it hurts the dignity of black people.
Yeah.
So he wants to fix it, and he ends up taking a bad beating in the White House. The White House is the place where they take the kids to abuse them.
Right.
You know, tie them down to beds and beat them with leather straps. Beat them so badly that their jeans, the threads from the jeans go into the cuts.
Yeah.
On them, you know, and that's based on real knowledge of what happened to these kids at the Dozier Academy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so he breaks up a fight, which actually turned out to not be a fight, but it was at the time he thought it was a fight.
Yep.
And he takes the worst beating. I think he took the worst beating because that was a thing of, we're going to bring this guy down.
Yeah.
Because those guards, prison guards, they know who's supposed to be in prison and who's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
And they know who's a good kid and who's a troublemaker. And they knew that this kid was different.
Right.
So it's, we're going to beat you down. And they beat him worse than anybody else. And he was the one who stopped the fight. And they beat him worse.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to beat this out of you.
Yeah.
That's slave master mentality. We have to beat this out. That's when he said that white men know how to handle black men because their fathers tell them how to handle black men,
right.
Black people. And that's how they tell them how to handle them. Beat it out of them.
Yeah.
Or imprison them. Or call the cops on them. You see shades of that today.
Yeah.
All around you.
Mm-hmm.
Like white kids automatically fear black children. You know, because they've been taught that by their fathers.
And they're
taught that by their fathers.
And it's just kind of been ingrained in society where no one has ever the white fear of us getting that revenge.
Right.
That would to them would be unfathomable.
Because they would seek revenge.
Right. Right.
And then he talks about how Martin Luther King, it's funny you should say that, because Martin Luther King had that whole line about, we'll love you into doing right by us.
Mm-hmm.
We will love you so much, we will not fight you back. We will love you so much that you will be shamed into loving us. That clearly doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an actual Martin Luther King quote, and it clearly doesn't work. If it did, we wouldn't be here right now.
And
would we?
And you think about religion, like the opiate of the masses, the them telling you to love your enemy because the enemy right. gave us the religion.
Right.
And like, yeah, it's just.
And how did the enemy give us a religion? At the end of a whip.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, everybody takes that out. Takes that. That knowledge is somehow forgotten, that this love of this religion was beaten in. This respectability politics was beaten in. Respectability politics that Elwood loved so much is based around fear of, if I don't act right, bad things will happen to me.
Right.
By these unseen forces that loom over me all the time will do bad things to me. If I don't act right. So if I act right, then nothing bad will happen to me. Well, here's a kid who did act right his whole life, and he paid the price for it.
Right.
You know?
And then he meets this kid, Turner, who's kind of an orphan, and the Malcolm X to his MLK, but you can't really be. It's almost like he was the opposing force, but you can't, with the given circumstances that they both had where they were, they couldn't really... He couldn't really be Malcolm X, but it was almost
Turner was a good kid in a different way.
Yeah.
I think it was Roxane Gay who said that she didn't see any of them as bad kids. We don't know if any of them were bad kids.
Like, some of them probably were,
because
but then
once they get there, the system shapes them into something else.
Yeah,
we don't know.
There was a story that one of the real life stories of a guy that was 73 years old at the time of the, I think it was on PBS. I think he skipped school or something. I don't know what it was, but it was some petty thing like skipping class, and he got sent to the Dozier Academy. It was some minor thing that he did, and he got into that system.
Right.
And it's almost it doesn't really matter if they were good or bad, because you get to the point where they were beaten down, and you get to the point where it's almost the way that the book is set up, we don't really need to know that much about Turner until the big reveal. I mean,
until the reveal. Yeah, you don't really need to know. You don't need to know anything about him. You know, you don't need to know why he was there, or it doesn't really matter why anybody goes there, because you know that most of the people that are there are there for no reason at all. They're just there to be there.
It's basically a concentration camp.
It is. It is. That's what it is. And it's segregated.
Yeah.
How are you keeping kids like this? Yeah, you said it, and we still have to keep you segregated from each other. You know, I would like to have heard what they were telling the white kids about the black kids. Yeah, you're in here, but you're still better than them.
But probably, because there still had to be niggers in order for them to feel superior.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, I think
even
that goes
in here. You still have a superior feeling, even though you're in here. Even though the same thing's happening to you, you're being beaten. You're being beaten in the White House. You're being sexually abused by guards.
And they really didn't talk about that much.
Sexually abusing. You just knew it was happening.
Yeah.
When they kept making references to Lover's Lane.
Yeah.
And the black Mexican kid was going to get that guard. I was like, oh, he raped him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why he's like, I'm going to get his ass.
I like how a lot of stuff was said but really left unsaid. Like you could infer like with a lot of different things, like where, oh, that probably happened. Yep, I'm sure that he made allusions to it. He didn't really go into detail.
Which I think is even better, because that means you have to see it. You have to make the leap.
Yeah.
You have to see it in your mind.
It was a very and I guess we can talk about. We recommend this book. I read it in one
Absolutely.
Day. I read it in one day. So
Absolutely.
Now, if you
just be ready, because it's. I mean, you might cry in the car.
There were several times where I was alone in my apartment. I was just like, "Fuck, are you kidding me?"
Right.
Just
right.
Like,
it
holy
just kept
shit.
Coming. When the kid had escaped, he had been raped repeatedly by one of the guards. He's able to escape.
Mm-hmm.
Gets caught, brought back, and killed. That one, I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
You know, took him out back. And then not just killed, they beat him to death.
Yeah.
They couldn't just kill him. They have to punish him and then kill him. And in the process, kill him.
Yeah.
You know, you can just put a bullet in the back of his head and take him out and do him quick. Mm-mm. You have to punish him.
So
for having the audacity for trying to get away from this horrific reality.
So we get to the point where the facility is going to be inspected, and these big inspectors come in, I guess from the state, and all these officials are in. Elwood decides, while they've been doing their indentured servitude, they've been assigned, like, they got a good job of cleaning up around people's houses and stuff.
Got that good job. And the reason why you would take, and think about the why you would take those two out.
Because they're the smartest ones, probably the...
Right.
Yeah.
Highly intelligent.
Yeah. And
they're both highly intelligent, and they're presentable.
Right. And then the resources that they were using to get money on the side, like all this food and ice cream, or like stuff that was supposed to go to the kids... Like it went to the places in town. They would sell it and all this shit.
And the whole town knew.
Yep.
and didn't care.
Nope.
And partook in it. And again, this is based on true facts.
Yeah. And so Elwood's been taken.
What's the punishment for those people?
No, nothing. They weren't punished.
None.
They just kept it moving. And so Elwood's been taking notes of who was getting what was documenting.
Yeah, when he did that, I said, "Oh, that's bad." as soon as I saw that, I said,
"Yeah,
that's going to come back on him. That's bad."
He's documenting stuff, and Turner's like, "Dude, what are you doing?" And it got to the point where he wanted to write a letter. He wrote anonymous letters to like a black publication, like a black newspaper, trying to get people to, trying to draw attention to what was going on at the Nickel Academy. He finds out that these officials are coming to the school, and he decides to write a letter, and he's trying to pass the letter off, and he gives Turner the letter. And does Turner give the one of the officials the letter?
Yes.
And then all
I said, I'll do it.
Yeah, and then all hell breaks loose and Elwood gets locked up and beaten.
Takes bad beatings, gets locked in the solitaire, which means he's locked in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Bad beatings.
Then one day Turner's like, we're breaking out of here.
Yeah, because he's like, they're gonna kill you. He overheard them saying they were going to kill him.
Yep.
And Turner was like, well, I got to get you out of here. I shouldn't have given that letter. And Turner knew better.
Yeah.
But Turner, I think, allowed himself to believe some of what Elwood was saying.
Yes.
When he gave him that letter. He allowed himself to even through it. We got to remember, they're still boys.
Right. 16, 17.
You know, they still had a glimmer of hope that maybe he's right.
Yeah.
He knew better. He knew he was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But there was still a glimmer of hope in him. He hadn't been all the way beat out of him.
Right.
And it didn't. So they jetted.
They jetted. They run away. The bad guys that come after him. And then
you can hold that part back.
Oh, you hold it back?
Yeah, I don't think we have to give that.
Don't want
to
spoil it. Okay, and that's it. We recommend the book. I don't think you should
more,
know.
There's more after they get away.
There's more to it, and we don't want to spoil the swerve at the end because like it's a bit. It hits you the way a Shyamalan flick used to hit.
Right. That's exactly what I thought about. You know what else I thought about?
What's that?
Was the Denzel movie in the future.
Deja Vu?
No. The one where he is hiking across. He's blind. He's hiking across.
Oh, fucking Book of Eli.
The Book of Eli, yeah. And then you realize at the end he's blind.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
But then if you go back and you watch it again,
you can tell.
They're giving you hints the whole way through.
Underrated movie.
Yeah, they're giving you hints. If you realize he's blind at the end, but if you go back and watch the movie again from the beginning.
Yeah.
Hint after hint after hint.
Yeah.
They're giving you.
Okay. You know? Yeah, I think we left it off at a great place for them to read the book and say that somebody that I don't talk about reading all the time. But I love to read, but when I'm engrossed, it's a great story. And in the way that he's a great story. I tweeted this, guys. I said that he was one of the greatest American storytellers to ever live. The greatest. I forget what I said. It was a cool thing. And he tweeted back at me. He saw, thanks, man.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Wow.
Colson Whitehead, come on the show.
There you go, baby.
Yeah.
Come on the show.
That was the second time.
Come on the woke files.
I tweeted at him like after reading Sag Harbor too. Yeah, but he's great, man. Like it's.
Yeah.
Now, one thing okay, so I asked you to read watch that Roxane Gay review of it, and she had Open Mike Eagle, some other people. Oh God, it's a rock set. They talked for about an hour about the book, and it was she was one thing that I didn't really care for that I didn't agree with, and I know she's
thinking
like
about the women.
Yeah, I don't. It's called the Nickel Boys.
The guy said that.
Yeah,
he sat back. Now he didn't pipe up enough.
No, he was scared
during that whole sequence where the three ladies were talking about it. It was four people. It's Roxanne Gay. It's her third thing.
Mm-hmm.
Two other women and this gentleman, and they're talking. And he's a young dude.
Yeah, he's like my
they're
age.
All writers. All writers. And he didn't. They were complaining about the women characters didn't have enough agency. He said at one point, you know, it's called the Nickel Boys.
Yeah.
But he didn't say anything else. He didn't elaborate more on that. You know, there has to be at some point that people need to understand that when you read something, the story is not going to be all things for everyone.
Right.
You just have to accept that.
Yeah. You have to,
you know,
and from a guy who he won the Pulitzer, the main character was a woman, a young woman. His first fiction piece starred a young woman. The Intuitionist was about a black woman, a young black woman who was the first elevator inspector in a metropolis like New York. So the guy's giving you a track record from 3 years. His last book, he had a female protagonist. So it's like, it's kind of like miss me with that shit, man.
Well, yeah, you wanted to know those things.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't want to write about it. He didn't care to write about it. The book was about these boys.
Right. And I'm not saying you can't.
They were going to.
And I don't mean to say like you can't critique, but just think about.
Well, of course you can.
Yeah.
You know, but you have to understand that, which is odd for an author, for intelligent authors.
Right, who's very smart. Yeah.
They're not dumb-dumbs. And they're like, this is.
Like, what
you know,
do you.
She said at one point, you know, I'm not. She's. I'm at the point I want to see. I'm okay. I get that.
Yeah.
I feel like that too. She loved the book. And I think that's another thing. I think she was upset, her and the other woman, that they were upset.
So we recommend this. When you finish the book, go to YouTube and look at Roxanne Gay's book club, How Colson Whitehead's The Nickel Boys is Not.
Don't do it first.
Don't do it first.
They're giving you everything.
Yeah. It's like The Nickel Boys is Not Green Book. I don't know why that needed to be. Whatever. Anyway.
Maybe they're going
to
make a movie out of it.
They are?
I don't know. I hope so.
Roxanne Gay's book club.
I hope he writes the screenplay.
Maybe I can play the dad that leaves. In a flashback. Roxanne Gay's book or older shit, never mind. Roxanne Gay's book club has arrived, and it got real when we talk about Colson Whitehead's new book, The Nickel Boys, with Mira Jacob, Mike Eagle, and Debbie Millman. So they kind of have like they have this roundtable discussion on the book, and it's really good. It's about almost an hour. So after you finish the book, listen to this, watch it on YouTube. Okay, so continue, Randolph.
Yeah, and I think what bothered Roxanne Gay, what was really bothering her was the fact that those things were missing, those elements that she once spoken to were missing out of the story, and she loved it.
Yeah.
I think that bothered her.
Yeah, because she was like, fuck you, man. And she's talking about the grandmother, like the grandmother being like a kind of a downtrodden type person.
That bothered her is like I shouldn't like this.
Right, right.
You know, but it's just got me. It's so good that it's got me, even though it's missing these things that I look for. These things that speak to me and things that bother me when they're missing. I still love it. You know, and I think that bothered her.
That's some of the issue.
Her loving it,
but I kind of have issues with critique in the way that. Well, it's not what I wanted, so I don't. You can't do that. Everything's not going to be tailor-made to you. My interest then becomes like, well, wow, why did he tell it this way? Because he really trimmed the fat off this book. It was very sleek. It was very like to the point. Even though he still kind of meandered Like, he still kind of, it's like it was a quick read, but I could tell he took his time. Like, the way things were described, the way, you know, it was just like the diversions he took. Like, my favorite sequence was about the kid who escaped and the boxing. Because obviously you kind of think about, like, I guess Joe Louis. You think about Jack Johnson. You think about that. I think that's kind of what he was going for a certain degree. But like, I just really go ahead.
And how the kid wasn't intelligent enough,
right,
to hold up. But then as I was reading it, I was thinking
he was.
Was it the fact that the kid wasn't intelligent, or he just, I don't give a fuck, I don't want to do this anymore?
You know what?
I'm not going to lose. You know what I mean? This is all I've got.
Well, he says he's yelling something. If you go back, he's yelling something where he's like, oh my God, I thought this, and because he knew it was over. Fuck. Right. He knew he had fucked up, basically. Right. So at the end of the fight, he knows he fucked up. So he wasn't that dumb.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, it was very, what do you say, like sleek? Like, as far as like being like a, it was kind of like a brisk tail. So he trimmed the fat.
Very efficient.
Exactly. There you go. That's what I was looking for. It was really efficient, and you can't really develop these other characters. You think if they make a film out of it, somebody's got to have like already have their inner life and be able to knock out the scenes that like the grandmother has to be able to live. You know, whatever, everything that he told you in the film, he told you in the book, and just glean everything off that. Like, that's just what he presented. Now, if you were to probably investigate her life a little more, I'm sure it would be a little more three dimension. It would be more fully realized and fully fleshed out. But I know that character. That's an archetype. The downtrodden grandmother, the mom,
true archetype.
Yeah, the mom left. It's a lot of it's shitty moms out there. But I guess it's like, oh, what mother would have left? Like, you don't know why people do certain things.
Yeah, and you don't. Remember when The Sopranos ended and everybody was like,
yeah,
oh, I can't. I was like, no, I like that ending because that's their life now.
Yeah,
you never know what's around the corner.
Right.
For these people. You never know.
And
that's real life.
Yeah.
You know, somebody leaves, you may not ever know why they leave.
Right. It's like Moonlight.
You may not ever see them again.
Like the Mahershala Ali character in Moonlight, like he's there for the first act, and then the second act, he's not there. And you can infer what happened to him.
Yeah.
And that's it. Everybody knows that if you have some fucking, like, if you have some type of grasp on humanity and the way things work out in a town like that, you know what I mean? It's like, I think sometimes people, and I don't want to say that, oh, you can't critique. Obviously, you can critique stuff, but it's like, yo, let's be real. I think these people, all of those people in that conversation, smarter than me probably, that know that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's just like, come on, really? But then I think she did admit that she was kind of splitting hairs.
Yeah, and I love the movie.
Yeah,
and I love the book.
And they were talking, and the way they were talking about that cover, and then I looked at the cover again. Yeah. I was like, oh fuck.
I know. I was saying, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
let's end it there and talk about Loose. Let's like kind of get through Loose. Do you want to know?
Loose was a good companion piece.
Yeah.
To the book.
Yeah.
When you told me to go see it, I had seen the commercial for it, and I was like, I'm not going to see this shit.
Really? Really?
Yeah, I was like, I'm not going to see this shit. Just some white savior bullshit.
No.
I don't need to say this.
Because when I saw it, I got sized.
And then when you, that's all I thought it was going to be. This is some white savior bullshit. That's all it's going to be. Like that other fucking movie that I think Mark Wahlberg did, where they adopted three Latino kids. I'm like, I'm not going through this shit.
Oh, no. I mean, that's something if I were to see that.
White savior bullshit, and then they're going to be white folks that are going to save this African kid and blase, blase. But then when you told me to go see it, I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of starts like that, and then it makes these hard, it makes these turns all over the place.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is happening?
You know
here?
What? Now that you're talking about this, it kind of makes me think about. I think about Ed Norton in Primal Fear.
Yeah.
I think about, like, you know, a little Kaiser Sose. So Luce is basically a liberal-minded couple. Amy and Peter Edgar are forced to reconsider their image of their adopted son after they discover he has written an extremely disturbing essay for his class at school. Stars my girl Naomi Watts, Tim Roth, Octavia Spencer, and Kelvin Harrison Jr., who is fucking phenomenal.
You know, the funny thing about that is that that essay, he just did what they told him to do.
He did the assignment, yeah.
That's, he did it. He did the assignment exactly how they told him to do the assignment.
But his hating ass teacher, Octavia Spencer, she has not had a good year with teens. She had trouble, and in this one, she just got fucking put through the ringer. I think this is more of a liberal horror story than Get Out. I think it's,
yeah, it's a. It's also a treaty on respectability politics.
Yeah.
And it's also, like the Nickel Boys, it's a story about a boy who...
Former child soldier.
Trying to live up to other people's expectations.
Yeah.
Not allowed to develop his own expectations. And everybody places these expectations on him of what he's supposed to be. And he is just a child trying to figure out what he is supposed to be. And it's not fair. He's never allowed a chance to figure out what it, all the way back to when he was a child, when he was made into a soldier.
Right.
Made into a killing machine. And then he's obviously brilliant. He comes out of that, and he ends up being a valedictorian at his high school, track star, well-loved by everybody, from the really smart white teachers, dudes from the hood, and everybody loves him.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And it's supposed to take place in Europe.
All that, he's not allowed to figure himself out.
It's supposed to take place in your town, Arlington, Virginia.
Yeah.
And which is like interesting, because that's like, I know, like, years ago it was like that Northern Virginia was like the biggest melting pot in the country, like other than New York City. I remember reading some shit about that. But the writer director Julius Ona. He was telling the Kelvin Harrison to, like, really pay attention to Barack Obama and Will Smith, like these non-threatening, good-looking, like, people that's loved by everybody, and really kind of play with that. And it was just like, I saw this, and I was the only black person in the theater. My favorite theater on the East Coast, the Jacob Burns Film Center in Pleasantville, New York, which is basically, it's in Westchester, and it's like a non-profit theater, a movie theater. And I was laughing, and I was the only person laughing in certain spots, and the people, this one lady kept turning.
That's happened to me before in movies.
And dude, and I will tell you, and this brings me back to the time that we talked about, I'm Not Your Negro.
Yeah.
Like how I saw that film at the Jacob Burns Film Center, and there were moments where I was just like, is this movie for me? Or is this like a fun... It's like a fun movie where you see, like, I don't know, man. It was just fun
to watch the horror on their faces.
Yeah, it was like,
you know, and then the things that you say, like in I'm Not Your Negro, the things that were being said that were jokes or things that would make black people laugh, and you know that the person saying it is saying it to make you laugh in that manner. That
yes.
This shit.
Yeah.
Make you laugh in that manner. This shit here.
Like the friend. Know? Like
I had those same moments in the Black Klansman. It was I laughed out loud and no one else laughed.
How far do you want to go with this one?
I mean, we don't want to spoil too much.
Okay, it's such
a complex.
Now
movie.
You're falling back. Now you're falling back. I like how you're like, we're gonna spoil the shit out of this motherfucker. All of this shit.
We can. We can. You know, it's such a complex movie that.
Yeah.
There's no way to really talk about it without spoiling it.
I just know the homies on Hot Fire Starter. They manage to spoil movies. A lot of people don't care. Like they'll spoil movies, and I like the one.
Did they spoil Loose? Did they talk about?
Well, they're probably talking about it as we're talking about it right now.
They went to go see, and they were like, "It's great." I was like, "Yeah." I said, "I saw it on Lambert's good word."
Yeah.
So what happens is he writes this story, and his black teacher points it out to the mother that he must have some sort of problem. Well, the black teacher is misrespectability of politics.
Yes.
You know.
Mm-hmm. And he's just really... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think the problem for her was the problem she had with his boy.
Right.
And then it was, you don't want to be like those other niggas. You're supposed to be the shining example for what black people could be, and I'm going to force you to be this thing, and you can't have this darkness in you.
Yeah.
If you have this darkness in you, then... You can't be everything to everyone, basically.
Don't be like
Deshaun.
You're
not supposed to have this darkness in you.
Yeah.
You know, it must come from your past, and you're not supposed to have this darkness in you.
Oh,
like there's a little bit of darkness in him. That's the yin and yang.
Oh, dude, this kid that played Deshaun, the bad kid, he was supposed to be on Euphoria, but he dropped out. He dropped Euphoria, the Zendaya show on HBO.
Okay.
He dropped out because there was like a homoerotic scene, and I don't think he wanted to do it. And then I saw
scared.
This. He was scared. And then because like he was a kid that was on like I think he was on like a America's Got Talent or something. And he dropped out of it. But it was and I saw the scene. It was a little it was pretty homoerotic, but it was like it wasn't that bad where he kind of missed out on whatever, but like it's interesting that there was this kid because I didn't know that, but just he was good too.
Yeah
And it was just like it was so,
you know, because she caught him with he got caught with weed. She went into his locker, caught him with weed, and got him kicked off the track team where he was going to get a scholarship. That was his
right.
way out.
Yes.
You know, he doesn't have resources. That's his way out. And she kicks him off the she gets him kicked off the track team. You know, think about the injustice of that. You don't work with somebody like that.
Yeah.
You just automatically toss him to the side.
You just give up
on
these kids.
What does that tell you what your value is?
She's fucked up.
You know, you don't have any value. You only do that to black kids because the white kid was smoking the shit out of the weed.
Yeah. In
with
Arlington,
no
dude, in Arlington, yeah. Virginia, he had to get out of the streets of Arlington. How does that make you feel
with
as a resident?
Fear, he's smoking, smoking weed with no fear, you know.
And
there was little things they put in that I was like, like when he goes to make a sandwich, he takes out mayonnaise. I was like,
oh really? Oh shit! I didn't notice that.
Took out mayonnaise.
Did he like he? Yeah. I guess he liked it. I mean, I like.
Raised by white people.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
little things like that. I noticed.
From a technical standpoint, and now that you
calling his mom by her first name when she was mad.
When he was mad at her, Amy.
Yeah.
Amy. All right, Amy. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
He knew what he was doing.
Like that, and he was very intelligent. What he wasn't was experienced.
Right.
You know, he's very intelligent, but he wasn't experienced.
See, I don't know how to talk about this part that I want to talk about that's not the end. But maybe we'll have to talk about that off mic or something.
But the acting is so good. It's like, so when that girl tells the date rape story.
Jesus Christ.
His girl. I'm just gonna say it. They gotta go see it, man.
Yeah, I want them to
and
see
the
it.
Tears that were just rolling down her face.
Yeah.
I was like, where's that coming from?
She's wow. She was great. Like this movie. This is one of the best movies of the year that I've seen, man. I liked Last Black Man in San Francisco, The Farewell. I liked Loose. I would put Loose above The Farewell just because it's like, oh man, dude. From
that's the Awkwafina movie.
Yeah, that's the Awkwafina movie. I think what I gotta like, you kind of got me wanting to see this shit again, dude. But like, I'm definitely buying it when it comes out. But
yeah,
it was so, from a technical standpoint, like it went back, like the score, it kept going back to that theme of like the African, like the you know, like the score.
Right.
And it was like, you know, it was so ominous. Like you're kind of like, I don't even get that. I was more nervous and afraid of what was going to happen in this movie than I was about It when I watched It. Or probably than I'll ever be watching It.
Yeah, because you can't tell what's happening. You think you know something's happening, and then something changes. But they're dropping you hints about how he feels about himself all the time. Like
yes.
You talked about how they changed his name
mm-hmm.
because she couldn't pronounce it.
Right.
Like, bitch, learn how to pronounce his name.
Yeah. Well, what about that?
You know?
So let me.
Your name is your identity, and they just changed his identity, basically.
Do you think. Fuck, I can't talk about it. Well. You know,
go ahead, man.
You know what it is, like what's even more now that we've been talking about it, it made me think like, God, it's just a kid smoking weed. It's it's fucking weed. And you think about
cares?
And it's like these are kids in suburban Arlington. They're in suburban DC. How bad are they really? Until you push them. They're not bad kids. They're all fucking nerds. Mm.
You kicked him. Yeah, they're nerd kids, and you made him lose a scholarship
mm-hmm.
because you were offended at how his blackness looked.
Yeah,
and this was a black teacher doing this to him.
Mm-hmm.
It offended you of his representation of blackness offended you so much that you got his scholarship taken from him. The thing that was going to allow him to elevate himself.
Right.
Over weed.
Yeah. And we see how all this has played out where, I mean, you see countless people on Twitter, countless people on television talk about how, you know, white people have made weed adorable and extremely profitable after, you know, these laws have been, you know, overturned and rescinded and all that stuff. And it's just like weed. This is what reefer madness, really?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like that. It was just like the stakes were. I think it's just a testament to the acting because it's like, oh shit, it's just weed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like all this go. And
it's, how does a coach? That's another thing I don't understand. How did a coach allow himself to be punked into kicking this kid off the team? How does that happen?
I don't know, because it's just like, this is a public school.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, man, like, you can kind of pick it apart in that way. Like, if we want to nitpick and talk about
this. I don't think it's something to nitpick, though. I do think it's weed is enough if you're looking for a reason.
Yeah. Well, Le'Veon you know Bell got, I mean? Yeah, he got, like when he got suspended, it was just like, and then he got suspended for weed. This was like 3 or 4 years ago. I was like, it's just weed.
Yeah, but it's enough. It's you know, like, well, remember when Ricky Williams said, he was like, I smoked weed for my anxiety.
Yeah.
You know,
he was saying that shit before everybody was.
Yeah. And then people came down on him. Well, think of how much better you'd be if you didn't smoke weed. I'm like, are you crazy? What kind of stupid nonsense is that?
And now we know so much more. That was what? Less than 10, over 10 years ago? He said that shit. Damn, that is true. Yeah. I don't know, man.
People still say fucked up things like that about smoking weed. And I'm stupid shit like that.
I've never smoked it or anything, so it's like I'm not trying to be like I'm a, hey man, it's fucking weed, you know, but it's just it's weed.
Hey man, you know.
I just appreciated that. And I think maybe you and I talked about this Sunday where like there were certain moments that every emotion that you see him make, especially when he's by himself, there's a part in the movie where he's by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, is this fake or is this real? And then I think you said everything is real. I think you might have said that or somebody else did.
Everything's real.
And he feel, and then because I was texting with the homie, People's Critic, Tim Hall, last night, like we were talking about it. We were talking about like the final moment of the film that we won't talk about, where it's like, okay, yeah, this is I was like, case closed. I was like, okay, we're not going to spoil it. But I was just like, okay, this is, I think that was the ending is to your point of him having real honest emotions in that scene where he was by himself.
Yeah, well, there's a scene where he tells her, you know, I'm good at faking laughter. I'm good at faking being surprised.
Yeah.
Because he's good. He was real good at being what everybody else wanted him to be.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming roles of what other people wanted him to be. Not in a sociopathic way or anything like that. Just in a I want to please people way.
Yeah.
Which is a big part of people like a Will Smith and a Barack Obama. You want to please people. You want to please everybody.
Right, right.
Everybody. You want to please everybody. That was Barack Obama's blessing that allowed him to be president, and it was a curse in the way he was treated.
Yeah, man. It's a brilliant movie. Like, it just kind of, like, I haven't felt that way in a while. I want to say, like, just, I don't want to oversell it, but it was just like, it was pretty fucking intense. And these are just like kids. It, you know what it is? I think just the way, like, when you think about what goes on with these athletes and the shit that these kids do, like that what was that Ohio case where those kids, that football team raped a girl?
That town, Steubenville, I think it was.
Steubenville, yeah, and it had elements of that. So it's like, oh, fuck, are they really? Yeah. And it was just like he had all those pieces that just, it just worked seamlessly. And you just like, I don't know who to believe. And I don't know what the fuck is going on here. And it's like, and the thing that I liked about it, too, was, it was a meditation on I don't want to say if this is that. Like, I like the fact that we have motivations for all of the characters, maybe with the exception of the principal was just kind of a cipher in a way. Like, he was just
he's just there. And even like his interaction with the kid, I was like, ugh.
Well, you know why that is. This makes me look good. This makes the school look good. Yeah,
it makes the school look good. And you have no real attachment to this boy other than he makes your school look good.
And then just like, you're going to do it?
You wouldn't give a fuck about him. Why aren't you advocating for this kid who lost his scholarship because of weed?
The weed? You know?
As a principal, you don't care about this boy?
Yeah.
You care about this boy, but you don't care about this black boy.
Yeah. And it's just like, because it was like, oh, you're going to do another speech. It's like, I just got done doing a speech. I just finished. Doing one. So he's just like the prop. He's the black kid. Right. This, you know what this is? This is about the kid that's in these brochures. The black kid in the brochures. That's what this
Smiling
movie is
black
about.
Kid in the brochure.
And it's beneath that veneer of that kid being around all those white kids, and you're looking at who this kid was. This is like a black I mean, I put this character up there. Damn, that's really iconic in a way. I don't know if I'm speaking in hyperbole. But the more that we're talking about this, it makes me think about Reese Witherspoon in Election, like Tracy Flick.
Okay.
Even though that was a comedy. You know, that's who people say Hillary was, like a young, like an older version of Tracy Flick, and how like she would stop at. She was a little more of a she's more of a sociopath. This kid is a black kid.
Well, that's what I think Hillary is.
Well,
she's not, but that's what I think she is.
Luce was kind of like, I'm trying to figure this shit out, but don't you fuck with me. I don't know everything. Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing, but don't fucking push me.
I know if you push me,
yeah.
I know how to get your ass.
I used to hold guns.
I'll figure that shit out.
I used to hold rifles. Rifles and tuxedo people. Shoes.
Yeah.
Fucking shoes. Remember that Patrice O'Neal?
You know? Goddamn.
And rifle and Buffalo shoes. Buffalo Bills championship t-shirts. Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. That's bad. We're going to get canceled.
Like, I know how to kill people.
Yeah. So it was just like
I'm not afraid of any of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's another thing that scared them about him.
Mm-hmm.
Was his I'm not really afraid. Even when he was talking to his boy who was bigger than him and was pissed off, he wasn't scared of him.
No. It fucked with him, though. Like, it fucked with him because he was hurt and he was like, let me make this right. And I was like, well, what you gonna do, Luce? I was like, oh, shit.
You're gonna be all right.
What I did appreciate, I like the fact that you kind of got under the hood of what the parents were dealing with. Like, there was stuff where you kind of got motivations for the Tim Ross character, Naomi.
Well, that was a deep treatise,
something like that.
Treatise, you know what I'm trying to say.
I know what you're saying.
On interracial adoption.
Yes. Yeah.
You know. You didn't think about none of that shit when you adopted a dish, you know.
I was like, because
what was your real motivation for adopting it? Because you, man, knew you wanted a baby.
Yep.
Why did you allow yourself to be punked into something that you didn't want?
Mm-hmm. Now was that the?
Well, now you're here. Well, now you're here now, so you have to deal with it.
Was that his ex? Who was that?
No, that's his wife.
No. Who was the woman that they went to go see the party with the baby?
Just a woman. Just a woman.
Oh, just a friend, right? Just one of their friends.
Just a friend, neighborhood friend.
Okay.
Just happens to be a thing, and he loves babies because he had wanted a baby.
Yeah.
Never got a baby. He got a damaged 10-year-old.
Yeah.
And had to raise him from there.
And I just think about that investment, the investment that they made, like.
Right.
And when it's you kind of there's the swerve there, but it's like it's not really a swerve because, you know, like, of course they're going to act the way that they act in that pivotal scene. You know, like, of course they're going to do that.
All right. Right. And that to me was that was every black mother I've ever seen been like, not my baby.
Right. Or just any parent. Like, any parent's going to do that.
Yeah, so
it's like, I was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, this is this. Because once that happened, I'm like, okay, this is going to happen the way that. And then the part where we can't talk about was like, oh, they didn't really need that, but it's interesting that they did it. But then when you put Octavia Spencer in that part, like an Oscar winner, like she's got to have one scene.
Her scene is her interaction with her sister.
No, that's what I wanted to ask you about. What do you? And even her last scene was the scene that I'm talking about, where it's like they didn't need
powerful scene.
Yeah,
but you're right. They didn't really need it, but it was a good scene.
I didn't mind. I didn't mind it at all. Like, you kind of got me wanting to see this shit again, but I don't. I think maybe I'll just hold off until Blu-ray or digital.
Yeah, but it was a good scene.
Yeah. Now tell me.
But it kind of lends itself to why her character was so respectability politics on that shit so deeply.
I like that you got to see that aspect. It was interesting that they did that. You know, what did you think about her storyline with her sister?
I mean, I'm not surprised. That's every black family I know has got one.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, everybody's got something.
Right.
We just seem to have more. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because of the way life is here for us.
Mm-hmm.
those possibilities are always there, that someone could slip down the road of addiction. It's real easy.
Yeah.
You know, coming from where I'm from.
Well, she had mental issues too.
Yes.
And it was just
And do black people get help with their mental issues?
No.
Other than self-medication?
Self-medication and Jesus.
You know? It falls to the family to do, and the families get tired.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Well, you realize you can't handle it.
Right. Right.
You know, and then you feel guilty about that, but should you?
I don't know. I don't know, man. I think this is one of the best movies of the year. This is one of the best I've seen all year.
So many layers, so many things happening.
Yeah, so I highly recommend this. Randolph, where can people find you, bro?
You can find me on Twitter at Real Talk for You, podcast, Three Guys On. You can get at me on Facebook if you want, Randolph Terrence on Facebook. Come see me in a show. I don't know where you're going to put this
I'll put this up tonight, and you're doing City Winery on the 20th, and you're doing...
I'll be in Frederick, Maryland at the Cellar Door on Sunday.
Okay.
This upcoming Sunday.
Okay.
And then on the 20th, 2 days later on the 20th, I'm at City Winery in D.C.
You know, Van Hunt was there not too long, a couple days ago.
Well, but the misses... I feel grateful to get up on the stage that he was on.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And just come on out and see me. You can also see my work on Get Up DC, hosted by Mr. Reese Waters. I'm a writer on that show, television show, local show in DC. And on my Facebook page, I'll post things that I write that he basically makes his own. Basically, where he, and I say make his own in the best way, where he takes my words and turns them into prose.
I've always admired that guy from afar. I never really met him. Got to meet him.
He's right up your alley. He went to Columbia. Went to private school.
Oh, he's smarter than me.
Went to Columbia.
He went to St. Albans and Columbia. Yeah, I'm not. You know, I'm not the smartest.
Guy. Very intelligent.
Yeah.
Very funny.
Yeah. Well, that's great, Randolph. This was fucking awesome, man. This was well,
man. I appreciate you for letting me do it.
Yeah. Thanks for watching the movie and reading the book.
Thank you, man. Thank you for your recommendations, man. You haven't steered me wrong yet. You know.
Well, I try. I think
the first time you do, I'm gonna be like this. Man.
You're gonna be pissed. You're gonna.
Motherfucker got me watching this bullshit. Some things I'm not gonna. You know, like
no, I know.
Watch Aquafina's movie. I'm just not gonna.
Oh, you're not gonna watch The Farewell.
No.
I think you'd be missing out,
no.
But I guess the next one. Well, The Last Black Man in San Francisco is on demand.
That
now.
I do need to see, and it's not around here.
It's on, but it's on demand. You can watch it.
Oh, it is. Okay,
yeah. It just came out digitally, so it's like it's on VOD and it's on Amazon. So I'm just gonna wait till it comes out on Blu-ray because I'm tactile. I like to have the Blu-ray will have it digitally and physical. Yeah. So that's another one that's like. It kind of everything kind of washed over me towards the end of the film. I was like, okay, this looks like this is going to be kind of pretentious in ways that I appreciate. But then I was just like, oh no, this is even better than I thought. Like this is about
looking forward to it.
Yeah, dude, I think you'll like that one.
Yeah.
All right, man.
All right, brother.
Thank you so much. Hold on to the line, and we'll.
Yeah, I got you.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Take it easy, folks.